Lodge were based in Edenfield when I took them over, and the firm was over Darwin. And like as I was saying, I was running six vehicles for them, and after being short, not having got paid for 3 months, the amount of money owing was too great for me to carry on business without. So they went into liquidation, and I had no option but to follow them, and finished up 20,000 pounds down. So it was after that that I decided that I was going to cut some of my trade, and I got rid of the haulage side of it, and just kept virtually the garage going, because I couldn't afford at that time, having been made bankrupt by the firm, to be able to pay anybody any wages. So I had to virtually start again in the garage, which I did.
Which year was this?
1982. And I virtually pulled it all back virtually by the time I sold the garage in 1990. So very good.
Can you tell me what Spring Cottage was like when you first sort of moved in? Springbank Cottage, yeah.
Well, it was just an ordinary little bungalow, which in actual fact had two bedrooms. And eventually, when our family increased, we took a wall out and extended the kitchen, making it into a dining room kitchen, and the room that was the kitchen we made into a single bedroom, giving us three bedrooms, and put new units in all the way through virtually. And it was like that when it was bulldozed down after I'd sold it, of course, you know.
And there was a loft?
Well, there was a loft in so much as it was. It was just more or less like an old house, ordinary house loft. But when, just after we moved there and I was up in the loft, there were some stained glass windows, and there was also the framework for a loom, which I found other parts for in the garage. And by the time we'd finished putting it, virtually seeing what we got, we'd got within one piece of having an old-fashioned hand loom there, which at the same time the mill at Elm Shore was taken over by Lancashire County Council, I think it was. I think it was private then, and I gave the loom in its little bits, various bits, of course, to them, and they built it up at Helmshore, and it was, I think they started putting cotton through it and used it to as a demonstration unit in the first place, because I think it was the first one they had there, the hand loom. I think they've got some more since then, but I don't know where it's gone to. But I got a letter from Lancashire County Council thanking me for the use for the loom, but I haven't seen it there in later years. So,
Can you remember any sort of particular cars you had in your time? You're obviously very interested in cars, but
cars that I've had.
When you came to, you know, from when you came to Edenfield, what did you sort of?
Yeah, well, when I came to Edenfield, I had an Austin 12, which was the. No, I didn't. I had a standard Vanguard, a van conversion, which after a few years I changed for a Morris Isis estate car. And when I joined the motor clubs, I started rallying it, and then changed over, and I had a small Land Rover for the garage use, and I had a finished up buying a Mini to rally, and
Was it souped up? Did you do anything to it?
We tuned the Mini, altered the Mini, and we put disc brakes on the Mini before BMC had put disc brakes on their 1100s and things. And I finished up with a Mini that had an 1100 engine in it before BMC did, and also it had disc brakes on before any of the Minis had that the BMC people produced, which made it in quite a potent car. And we arrived at the Morecambe Illuminations rally one night with a quite fast Mini, which we thought nobody knew anything about. And as we drove up onto the podium for the start of the rally, the speaker announced that this was a trial car out tonight, and they were expecting great things of it. It had disc brakes and it had a very powerful engine, and sank us all really to our shoes. But the car had obviously do a lot more speed than was supposed to be, and in actual fact at that point it was doing about 120 miles an hour on a fast piece of road, and about 90 mile in third gear, and maybe about probably 72, 74 in second, which was quite a lot in those days, of course. Unfortunately, we broke a suspension unit on the fifth leg on that rally, and we had to leave it alone for that night, so we had an early return home to go to bed before we had to work on the Sunday morning. But eventually we got it up to top speed, the car, and we had to do just over 140 miles an hour when we finished, when I'd finished tuning it.
Were there any rallies local to Edenfield?
Oh yes, we used to run the Mini 7 Club rally, and it started at the Edenfield garage and along to the Quarrymen's and then down the little lane to Ewell Bridge before the new motorway was put in, and then up past the golf links and to the end of can't just think what it's called, that lane up past the
Clod.
Golf links.
Clod
no,
Lane.
It's past Clod Lane. No, Clod Lane runs from the pub at the end through to the golf links. But this is Greens Lane, up Greens Lane, behind the pub, the Bridge Inn pub, and up past the golf links and to the end. And we used to reckon 2 minutes from the garage down to Ewell Bridge, and then a minute from the back of the Bridge Inn up until you met the gateway just up at the school, the high school ground, of course. And one chappy one night, you were allowed the 60 seconds of the minute that you were in from start, and one chappy did it in a minute from the garage down to the bottom to Ewell Bridge going via Quarryman's Pub in a Mini 7, in the Mini 7 Club. So but we ran that for about two seasons.
Was that an evening?
It was an evening. It was generally an evening rally, yeah. Sometimes run on a Tuesday night, and sometimes we ran it on a weekend, but it was the start of a on the weekend runs that we did. We ran a full length rally till 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning, where you would probably finish maybe either at the end of Widdup into Burnley, or maybe finish over Clitheroe way and finish up maybe somewhere Waddington or over by Newark and somewhere over that way, you know.
So what was the club called? Was it?
Well, it was the Mini 7 Club as ran those rallies, starting from my garage. But also,
were you involved with that? I mean,
yeah, I was a member. I was a member of Mini 7 Club, and I was also a member of Noeldale Car Club and Highmoor Car Club. And in actual fact, what the idea was that for rallying, you joined a number of clubs, even as far away as Lancaster Car Club, or perhaps as far as Chester Car Club, which both clubs I was a member of, so that you got invited on a lesser charge for the rallies that those car clubs run, and you didn't have to qualify for those car clubs because you were already a member of the club, you see. So you joined various clubs up and down the country, and you were invited to their nights out, like you were if you're a member of Stockport Car Club or Morecambe Car Club, then you were invited to those clubs, you see.
Good.
So
it says leisure here, but you've already you were driving well, sevens and whatnot. That wasn't that
mini
set.
That was your leisure.
Leisure and pleasure.
Did you play any instruments?
No, I'd learned to play the piano as a child, but that went out when I joined the forces. I never got a chance to play for over 2 years, so I just didn't. I haven't played since, virtually.
My dad was a singer.
He was a bass singer and sang the Messiah through the Methodist churches and Baptist churches and chapels for a long, long time. He was taught by a chappie from Manchester. I just can't think what he was called now, but he used to go to Manchester every Saturday afternoon to learn to sing.
And what was his basic choir? Which choir was he with normally?
Well, he didn't sing with any basic choir. He was a solo artist as a singer. He used to sing bass baritone or baritone bass, whichever way you want to put it around, kind of thing. But he used to sing amateur opera and things like that, you know. The Messiah and
go all over the place.
Oh yeah, he did. Yeah. I think he did one or two wireless. The wireless in those days, he went for one or two trial things like. And I know
in
he sang.
Manchester,
I know.
They,
yeah, they, I know he sang with Isabel Bailey once or twice, and he sang.
Well, Hazel, his sister, says that.
He made a record, but nobody can trace it. So, but I haven't heard of him making a record. But my sister says that he made a record, and I have got it. So,
sorry, I'm just checking. I think you've covered most of these.
One thing I didn't tell you about was my mother was a weaver at Nangreaves when I was born, and. I mean, I don't know very much about that period, except that later on in her life...
You were there, when you were born.
Yeah, that's right. But she ran six looms at Nangreaves Mill, and they were called... they were Northrop looms, and there were four-beam looms and six-beam looms, and there were only 12 of these six-beam looms ever made. And they made what they called bird's eye material, and bird's eye material was for shirt fronts, gentlemen's posh shirt fronts. And Frank Sinatra had these bird's eye shirt fronts, and he used to order it on the roll, and Fred Astaire, and they ordered it from the mill at Nangreaves. And when they closed the mill, I think it was in the 50s, I asked the manager, John Kay, if they'd still got an order from one of the important people like Fred Astaire, if I could have one of the orders, and they wouldn't allow me to have an order, and found out after as the orders were just burned and destroyed. But when my mother went in on a Friday and a Saturday, especially the Saturday mornings, to make this material, it was made when the rest of the mill were closed, so that it was kept clean. It didn't have the dust of the rest of the mill dropping on it as it was being made. I went in and was given the job of sweeping under the looms when the loom had been used, and my mother got a penny for the Saturday morning that I went in. Cleaned
really
under
something.
The looms. Yeah.
I can remember being in the. Is it switched on? No, I better not say
anything. can we just come back to the village? You know,
yeah.
You lived in the village for what?
For 30 years. For 32 years, actually.
Can you sort of cover that period? Think about sort of the shops when you first went there to the shops after when you left.
Yeah, well, a lot of them, as far as the shops are concerned, they'd started closing when I left because, of course, we were getting the supermarkets. But like you had, Roland Roundell was a butcher, I think, and then there was Dick Birch's butcher shop, and there was Munnell McDowell's butcher shop, which was Kay's. That's three. The co-op business, there was just the one small co-op where there'd been, I think...
There was two.
That was before I went, before I came to the village.
It was when I was a child.
Yeah.
Right, and there was two, three, in fact.
Yeah, and of course there was the cloggers and that. I don't know what time, when he left the village... And of course, there's a ladies' knitting and shop, and an haberdashery shop, a paint shop, and that
wallpaper,
which was in the same block as the doctor's is today, of course.
Any food shops?
Yeah, of course there were. I mean, there wasn't the co-op when I came to the village. There was the shop which was Keith Scrannage's greengrocer's shop now, was a little grocer's shop, and he delivered, of course, around the village. As far as the pubs were concerned, there was...
They delivered by bike.
Did they?
Mm.
Oh. I'm not surprised at that. But, I mean, in the olden days, there was the Quarryman's, which was just a beer house.
But you remember that being open?
That was open when I came into the village, but it closed soon after. And then David Stringfellow bought it, and they did it up. And the...
Pack Horse, was that still going?
Yeah, the pack was open as a pub and liquor house, and the Coach and Horses and the Jockey, and then there was the Conservative Club across the road where you could get a drink, and then the Rostron's Arms, the
Volunteers?
Conservative Club.
Was the Volunteers open?
No, the Volunteers wasn't open when I came to the village, but there were a few beer houses which... I know that there had been beer houses because 150 Market Street was a beer house which was next door to the Pack Horse, which my mother-in-law came a living in. That was a beer house.
So what could you say what a beer house was?
Well, a beer house was virtually just an ordinary house where sometimes they made their own beer and sometimes it was bought in. And it was generally housed in the cellar, and they'd go down the cellar and draw a pint
sold in a jug
or in your own jug, but generally they didn't have their own jugs or glasses, but they sold beer from a keg.
Did you drink it on the premises?
No, you took it home with you, a beer house in general. There was one at the bottom of near where the road came up from Irwell Vale, which was where Cathy lived.
Yeah.
That was a beer house. And 150,
the Adelphi.
Yeah, that's right. It was called the Adelphi, that one. Yeah. And then there was the one at 150, and there was a little one next door to where the Conch Club is. There was also a little toffee shop there, opposite the Jockey. And then there was the Conservative Club up Gin Clough Lane, wasn't there?
Couldn't the grocers sell beer then?
Well, I don't know whether the grocers sold beer then, or I don't think they did, no, in I actual fact.
So anyway, if you wanted beer, you went to a beer.
Yeah, or a pub. Yeah.
Well, did the pubs do off licences, off the premises as well?
Well, some of them did, yeah, most of them did. Like the Quarrymen's, you could go in and get a beer. They didn't sell whiskey or anything, but they sold beer. and you could take a jug into the pub and get a pint or a quart of beer and then take it out and take it home to drink it, kind of thing.
I'm trying to work out, you know, why they were commercially viable. Was it a lot of them did make their own beer, didn't
some
they?
Of them did, some of them did and some of them didn't. Some of them had it delivered by dray.
A couple of barrels.
Was it something you could do without a lot of capital expenditure?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, and of course, you see, it was mainly for the quarry trade. The quarries were all along the hills on the top above Edenfield village, and the quarrymen came down from the quarries, and on their way home they'd stop in for a pint of beer, or they'd take a pint of beer home with them, or as 150 Market Street was concerned, they'd leave their pint jugs or their quart jugs on the step outside the house in the morning. And the lady who was the pint, this is before my time, of course, but they used to leave the jugs on the doorstep on the way up, going to work in the morning, and on the way home at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, whatever time they finished, they'd then pick a pint or a quart up, which the jug had been filled, because she knew what time they'd be coming home, and she'd draw it a few minutes before they were due to pick them up. And you get a line of men coming down from the stone quarries and all picking their pints to take them with
but
them
to
drink at home.
There were still some beer houses left when you came.
No, there wasn't. There was just the pubs left.
Just the pubs.
And the last one, of course, to just be a beer house was the Quarrymen's.
That was open when I came to the village.
What
about fish and chips?
Well, there was just the one fish and chip shop in the village. Can't just remember who the names was because we didn't use it very often because it was too far to walk over. By the time you got home, your fish and chips were cold. And I think, you know.
I'll have to try and get you some later then because we don't often have fish and chips.
What about the road surfaces? Were they all tarmacked?
Oh, they were all tarmacked virtually when I came up into the village. But of course, when I lived down in Bury, they were all cobbles for a time. And of course, with living at Nangreaves, I had to walk it to school unless it was raining hard. And in those cases, it cost us a penny or tuppence to get a bus a mile into Walmsley.
Were you burning coal at that stage when you first
came? Yeah, we had a coal fire until I put central heating in the bungalow. Yeah, I can't just
now
remember.
Was that delivered in hundredweight sacks, was it? Was there a coal merchant?
That's right, yeah. It was, I can't just remember the name, before it was C&B Coal at Rottenstallers used to deliver our coal. And we had a Rayburn, which burned furnaceite, which was a composition of coal dust and cement, of course, in round eggs, like they call them duck eggs in the olden times. But for your best coal, you generally had cobs or something like that, which burned a lot longer, of course.
Was there a coal merchant actually in the village?
Yes, there was. He lived with a lady over the bank, which was the National Westminster Bank, I think, in those days. And he's called Jones.
And where did he keep his wagons?
Now then, did he? Yeah. I think in the sidings at Rottenstall. He delivered out of the sidings at Rottenstall and delivered the whole area, and he's called Neil Jones. But I have a feeling as he was kind of apprenticed to somebody else, and his name wasn't on the wagons to start with, but I can't think what the name of the chap he was called.
What about milk deliveries, were they?
Well, they were delivered by the farmers
around. Which farm supplied yours?
Well, I got my milk off Albert Guy. He's still a local chappie around, in actual fact. He lives with his sister, who's Alice Phoenix, of course.
And did he deliver?
He delivered. By a bottle. By a bottle. I know a bit about the farming because my my parents were farmers and sisters. My mother's sister was a farmer, and my uncles were farmers, because I even know a bit about that side of it, like. And I did deliver milk in the from the churn, a pint measure, into the old milk jugs that were sat on the step with a saucer over the top to keep the flies out, and the old crocheted covers with the beads around them to keep the flies
out. This is when you were a lad?
This is when I were a lad, yeah, of course, yeah.
What about newspapers? Can you remember?
Well, we had a newspaper delivered. There was one newspaper shop in the village and one post office, of course. But we used to get newspapers delivered by the paper shop.
Groceries that you've already...
Well, yeah, the groceries. There was a little toffee and grocer's shop at the end by the school there, opposite the church, Mrs. Peake's. And all the school children used to be going in for their penny lollies and their penny... what do they call them? Little tiny sweets, dolly mixtures and aniseed balls and things like that. There wasn't much chewing gum about those in those days, but you did get chewing gum and gobstoppers and things like that, of course.
And who collected the refuse? Was it Rossendale or was it Ramsbottom?
I think it was Ramsbottom. It was Ramsbottom, because we're the boundary for the Ramsbottom area and the Rottenstall area is a stone marker just past the Quarrymans, a few yards past the Quarrymans. And past the Quarrymans, of course, you came into Rottenstall and Ramsbottom. Going down the Blackburn Road, it was about halfway between Ewell Bridge and... an Eden Field kind of thing, the boundary down that road. I remember the old chappie who used to... can't think of his name now, but he used to call in the garage, and we used to say that he used to take a gallon tin of waste oil, and he used to sprinkle down the edges of the walls and in the gutters with the waste oil to kill the weeds all the way down the road, and it saved him digging the weeds out every year. But about once a month he'd come and take a gallon of oil in a tin, and he'd do so far down one month and so far down the rest of the
effective?
Month. Oh, very effective, yeah. The
did
sulphur in the oil.
Did you make a mess on the pavement?
Well, no, he only... A very thin line of oil, so it didn't spread very much, but yet it was sufficient to kill the weeds. We never had any grass in the bottom of the walls or down the sides of the footpath or anything all the way down. The footpaths were still where the horse down going down round by the tip, going down to Ewell Bridge, before they put the new paves in, all down there, all were worn away with the iron-rimmed carts, dragging the carts so that they wouldn't have to put the brakes on the carts to hold them back. The stone curbings were all worn away all the way down there, I remember. Yeah, from those days. Yeah.
Any rag and bone men at all, can you remember?
Just a few to start with, yeah. We had rag and bone men around. One chap who used to come round with a donkey, and he were always whipping this donkey to make it walk faster, and it didn't make any difference to it. He always had this bit of string on the end of a whip. It couldn't have got through its fur, but his hand went every time the donkey took a step, virtually, I remember.
If he gave him anything, did he give you anything back?
Yeah, you got a pumice stone if you wanted a pumice stone. Occasionally you got pegs off him for pegging the pegs on the line, you know. But I can't just remember how much you had to give him for him to give you a peg or whatever the trading standards were in those days. You know.
What about public transport?
Well, there was just the buses in those days, and they used to reckon that you could get from Edenfield to anywhere because there was such a good bus service through Edenfield.
But it was basically Rottenstall, Edenfield, and then where?
Yeah, but you could get kind of thing Haslington to Rochdale or Bury to Bury to Rawtenstall, Rawtenstall to Bolton, Bolton via Ramsbottom to wherever, you know. You could virtually get a bus to anywhere. And at that time, of course, when I came to Edenfield, the piece of road between the top of Bolton Road North and the Blackburn Road, Rawtenstall Road junction traffic lights was reputedly the busiest, one of the busiest pieces of road in the whole of the country. And that's why we got quite an early piece of bypass road in to cut that out. But of course, with them not carrying it through from Ewood, going down towards Stubbins. That piece of road that runs up from Chatterton, the roundabout from Chatterton, yeah, up to the top road was supposed to carry on up the fields and join the Nordin Road at the top of the hill. But they've never done it, and I don't know why, really, because it would have cut the whole of the village out then. But they just seemed to stop. But it was proposed, that piece of road, and that was what where it joins Shuttleworth, the old A56 near the Duckworth Arms. That was supposed to carry on straight up the fields to go
up. So they got up to Scoutmore.
That's right, yeah. It was supposed to join that there, up there. Yeah, originally. I don't know why it wasn't completed when they did that piece of road in.
Had the trains stopped running when you first came?
Oh, yeah, there were no trains running. No, and then the East Lancashire Railway took it over and they started running the trains again, yeah.
What about the Conservative Club? Did
he
ever...
No, I had no connection with the Conservative Club. It did go down quite a lot and had very few members once over, but it seems to have revived a bit recently.
What about local councillors? That presumably, in your day, there would be Ramsbottom councillors. Did any live in the village?
The first connection was who I kind of had anything to do with was the chappie who became mayor of Rawtenstall. Can't think of his name now.
Not Philip Dunn.
Philip Dunn, yeah. Yeah, but until then I can't remember anything that was connected with before that time. And then after, of course, it became part and parcel of Rawtenstall, virtually did the north end of Edenfield, rather than connected with Bury and Ramsbottom. Just recently, kind of thing, the connection of the big urn that they're putting in the centre of Ramsbottom, which is totally non-connective with Ramsbottom, I would say. Two shuttles stuck on end meeting at the top point would have been much more in keeping with the connection of Ramsbottom with the Grants brothers and the industry that Ramsbottom's grown up through. It certainly hasn't grown up with any connection with the big urn in any way.
What about police? Can you remember being a village bobby?
Yeah, there was, in actual fact, talking about village bobbies, one of the chappies who was village bobby in Edenfield a good number of years ago, I saw him here at the front of the White Horse a few days ago in a car, and we were able to just put our hands up to one another, you know. But I haven't seen him for years and years, but he's obviously still a policeman, so...
What was his name?
Can't think what his name were.
There is one Frank Woods, but he said his father was a policeman in Edenfield.
Frank Woods?
Frank Woods.
No, I don't. No. That name doesn't come to mind.
But there's supposed to be a police house on Market Street. That's where one of the police houses was. Oh. Opposite the shops, roughly. But you can't remember.
No, I can't recall that.
You can remember seeing a policeman on his beat. Did he ever call in the garage?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, we had... When we had the garage, we had the police from all over used to call in, because the Akron Division used to call in, and then you'd get the policeman from Rawtenstall calling in, and also the police from Bury. And on one occasion, we had two policemen in, one from Accrington and one from Bury, and it was at the time that they had wirelesses on the bikes, and the chappie from Bury got the Accrington, came on the forecourt, and the policeman from Accrington was having a drink of tea in the garage, and he moved his bike, took it down the road 100 yards and parked it outside what used to be the Adelphi, just down the lane out off the main road, and then walked it, run it back up the road and came in the garage and said, "Hey, hello," he said. "I didn't think there was anyone here." You know, he said, "Well, my bike's outside." He said, "There's no bike outside now." And of course, it caused quite a lot of ruction because he lost his bike. So after about an hour, it eventually turned up, and one chappy came in and said, "Next of your customers, tell them there's a policeman sat round the corner. I've just seen his bike tucked away down the corner of the houses." "Well, who the..." Using swear words, he wanted to know who'd moved his bike off our garage down to the row of houses lower down.
Those were on bikes, but yeah. Was there a foot? Did you see the foot policeman?
Oh yes, yeah. There was a policeman. This chappie who I've just seen this last few days used to patrol by foot, and he didn't have a pedal cycle, though.
Wasn't much crime?
No, I wouldn't have thought there was in those days. No, not in Edenfield. We didn't have a lot in Edenfield. It gradually increased, of course, with crime increase in that kind of, on that side of the policing duties, but it was generally a...
Did they come in quite about stolen cars or...?
No, there wasn't so many stolen cars in the early period of 1960s. They weren't... there was very few stolen cars in those days. I did, of course, in the later years, of course, we did. In actual fact, I had my rally car stolen off the forecourt one time. Well, I didn't get it back, in actual fact. But the people who did steal it knew all about it, or they wouldn't have stolen it, because they picked it up with a crane or something from between two more cars as were bumper to bumper with it back to front. And it went during a period of between 10 past 12 and 20 to 1 one day when the chaps were...
Midday?
In the middle of the day, yeah. Off the top road. The cars were parked, as I said, bumper to bumper, and the Mini was in the middle. It was in the summer time when I was doing a little bit of repair on the car, getting it ready for the following winter season. And I'd been doing a bit of welding on it, and we'd had to stop to get it out of the garage to get another car in. And we parked it up with the other cars that were being repaired.
Were they to protect it?
Not particularly, no. No, I mean, they were just parked up to create a smaller give us more room on the forecourt, so that they'd been put bumper to bumper. And they must have pulled up on the top road with a vehicle with a crane on it, and they just picked it up out of the middle of the two other cars and popped it on the back of a vehicle and away.
What did the police say?
Police had no answer to it at all.
They did a wonderful job.
They did a wonderful job and never found it.
But presumably that car would be unique.
Oh, it was, yeah. But, I mean, you couldn't tell it from an ordinary Mini.
Ah.
Because, I mean, I hadn't altered it on the outside. But, I mean, in previous days, I mean, I was going up to... I was going up to Old Betts, I think, for some reason or other. I was going over to Naylor's for something for the horses. We had horses in those days. My daughters had horses, ponies. And we were going over to Old Betts, and there was a police car following us up Old Betts, and he stopped us on the long straight up there. And this policeman stopped us, and he said, like, "Did I know what speed I was doing?" I can't remember what kind of a car he was in. And I said, "Well, no, I was... within the law," kind of thing. Like, so he said, "Well," he said, "just watch your speed in future." Anyway, he got back in his car before I got back in mine, and when we got along to the new inn, he was stopped in the middle of the road and he waved me in again in on the new inn car park. So I said, what's wrong now, kind of thing. He said, you said it was only a mini car. I said, yeah, it's just a standard mini. He said, well, it's faster than my mini. Can I have a look under your bonnet? I said, yeah, you can have a look under my bonnet. So he had a look under the bonnet. He said, well, it looks like mine. But he said, mine won't come so fast up this hill. I said, well, I can't help that kind of thing, but this is just a standard mini. You see? And he said, well, he said, where do you come from? I said, well, I live at the garage at Edenfield. He said, oh, I might be calling round there again. I said, well, that's all right. You call round if you wish. Right, well, on your way and just watch your speed, like, you know. So that's as far as we got on that occasion.
He should follow us now these days. When I'm saying,
did he bring it for tuning after that?
No, no. I can't remember whether I saw him again or not. I can't recall it. Anything that happened after that with relation to that occasion. But obviously my mini was a little bit faster than his. But,
what about sort of health and medical things in the village? There was a... What was there?
Well, after Dr. Ford and Mrs. Ford were the doctors when we moved into the village, and it was either Mr. Ford or Mrs. Ford who attended
the
children.
They were both doctors.
They were both doctors, yeah. And they had a chappie called Dr. Crawford came into the... into the business with them, and then there was another chappie who came into the village who had to stop, and we met one time when we were together, and he lives up near Julia. I can't think, his name always eludes me. I can never remember his name, never.
Where was the surgery?
The surgery was in the doctor's house, as it was then, which was the house at the end of the row where the doctor's surgery is now.
What, with the chimneys?
With the chimneys, yeah. Yeah.
And was it sort of off to the right? As you look at the house, there's a house there and there's another building here.
That's right, it was part and parcel of that building. Yeah. Was the doctor's
surgery. And what about hospital? Which hospitals did you
Well, the hospital was either Bury or Rossendale, of course. But, of course, they did operations and everything at Rossendale in those, and they had, of course, a full maternity unit there. And they eventually they built an extra maternity unit on it before Burnley virtually took it over and moved half of the hospital up to Burnley, and they stopped. They did operations here for a long, long time.
Was there a pharmacist in the village?
Yeah, the pharmacist was next door to, what's he called, butcher's shop, what used to be Mr. Birch's butcher's shop.
Is it where it is now?
No.
Yeah, Mr. the butcher's shop is, and then the next shop was a pharmacy.
Oh, begging your pardon. Coming this way.
Going towards the next door to Rostron's. Next to the Rostron's.
The little shop.
Was the chemist and sweet shop, wasn't it? Wasn't it a sweet shop as well and tobacconist?
The one at the Joint Valentine's.
Yeah. The one at Joint Valentine's was a chemist and sweet shop.
And what was Valentine's?
Well, that's always been a butcher's, as long as I've known it. And a chappie called Dick Birch owned it. Mm. And he owned that field across the road from where the bus stops are, before the houses were put on it. And he used to put his cattle in there as he were going to slaughter.
Yeah.
And he used to slaughter his own, did Dick Birch.
And Dr. Ford's home was in that field.
Was it?
The big house. And he had his surgery in there when I was a little girl.
What?
In the house.
In the house. Oh.
even when I was 15 and I broke my arm, I can remember sitting in...
Now, that's not going to be on here.
can you remember the community centre at all? Anything happening in the community centre?
No.
By the recreation ground?
No, I know it was used by the children a lot, and occasionally they had dances in there to do with the village association. I was never a party of... I was never part of it at all, because we were virtually at the other end of the village.
So was there a north-south divide?
No, there was no divide in that, but my time was taken up with the garage, because the garage opened at 8 o'clock in the morning, and with serving petrol till 9, 10 o'clock in the evening, I have very little time. And then besides that, my daughters all had ponies.
Where were they kept?
Well, we had stables down the back of the garage between the house and the mill next door.
It's a paddock then?
And we had the field where behind the mill that was between Esk Avenue and the mill was a field to start with, and then they built those houses on it where Mrs. Dearden, I think she's called. Margaret Dearden, is it?
Dearden.
Margaret Dearden lives.
But that's on Burnley Road.
That's right. But all that piece of land between the two roads was a field. And I had that field for, must have been 15 years or so, for the horses. And we also had that three-cornered piece just lower down than where the Adelphi was, between the new motorway piece of road. It's a three-cornered piece, is that. We also had that off Richard Nuttall for the horses. And after he'd mown the field...